Hello and welcome to the Death of the Roman Republic.
Netflix review of the 2005 HBO original series, Rome. HBO's Rome, Season 2, Episode 6, Philippi, starts with, I'm hosting this episode by the way, starts with Brutus and Cassius marching in northern Greece. Cassius is concerned about grain provisions, but Brutus is saying, oh, the men are sick of marching, but Brutus himself, pretty happy-go-lucky, in good spirits, writing to say of the Republic that a pool bath he took a couple episodes ago, quite healing, it would appear. Octavian and the boys meet with Antony and Lepidus in Cisalpine Gaul. As Octavian is furiously riding, Antony thinks they can surprise Brutus and Cassius, who only expect to fight Octavian. Octavian says, oh, yeah, that's obvious. And this list he's writing here reveals it's a list of Brutus and Cassius's friends in Rome that should be killed and their money acquired. Lepidus is like, hey, some of my friends are on that list. And he expects Antony to say something to disallow this. Antony goes on to say, well, Cicero is the cleverest and has the best spy network, so he should go on there first. Good Antony. Start thinking he wants to add some other names as well. Octavian says that he'll go to Rome and state he intends to fight Brutus and Cassius alone, and Antony tells Lepidus, you'll stay here with a small force. Lepidus slightly protests, but he is compelled to listen to Antony. I know I blistered through that, guys. Just any quick thoughts or gut reactions need to throw out?
Just love the bit where he says, cut off his hands and nail them to the Senate. What Antony says to the messenger to start when he's talking about killing Cicero. That was like, Antony, you are cold and calculating with that.
Or was he simply big dog?
Gonna get less big dog Mark Antony in this episode. Visually speaking, when he gets rid of the beard.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was an ominous thing when they said Varinus would like kind of lead the death brigades. He would like tell the mafia people who to kill. I was like, uh-oh, they're sending our boy Varinus down an unsavory path yet again.
I guess I didn't pipe up there officially that did occur. There's another good part where Octavian tells Agrippa, yes, get the list to Varinus. And then Adia pipes up and says, we should add Jocasta's father. She's a bad influence on Octavia.
That's right. I wrote that down again. I'm like, she really thinks Jocasta's a bad influence.
Oh, yeah.
And then Octavian's like, no, this isn't for personal vendettas. And they're like, but he's rich. And they're like, yeah, let's get him on there. Yeah. Adia and Antony depart. Antony says that after Greece, they'll never be apart. Adia says that Brutus's head will be a splendid wedding gift. And Antony's like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A wedding. And he was not thinking that at all. fellas, that's what we call in the marriage game a hint. But anyways, Gaia blushes up Verina the elder. Verinus demands it once it is washed off and tells Gaia to stay away from his daughters. Kindest thing to do to a former lover, possibly. Varinus tells Massius to assemble the captains. They got work to discuss.
That was purely a business thing.
Yeah. He made very explicit in that regard. Yes. Gaia tells Massius, thanks for standing up for me. Massius says, I like you, slave, but I have my limits. So their dynamic is a little bit off with this Varinus intrusion, among other things.
Mm-hmm. I had a question in regards to this as kind of a subconscious thought of Varinus. Do you think that he's really against his daughter being over stylized with makeup? Because yes. Every time she gets, well, no, okay, that wasn't the question, Lorenzo. Anyways, because what I notice every time she gets more exaggerated with makeup, she looks a lot more like Niobe than when she is not. And do you think that is because he just sees so much of Niobe in her that he is just still feeling the guilt of what has happened, and that is why he is being like, no, don't do this?
I would assume it's because of the prostitution.
My gut reaction as well. But BP, that's also a very good point. I mean, it's possible that both can be true, certainly. Varinus explains that each of his captains have 10 of the richest men in Rome to kill by will of Octavian Caesar. Varinus's children run through and out the door. Varinus tells them to stay out of the mud. Lucius immediately runs into the mud. Men watch them and approach Varina the Elder, one with piercing blue eyes, stares at her and asks about the way to the temple. And an old woman leads the girls away from him.
Notably, Lucius running around with fixed elephant toy. Good dad, Varinus.
Good dad, Varinus.
And Kay, as an elephant stan, I bet you were really excited to see that.
It's hard to be excited for anything in this show, unfortunately, just because a lot of good things get taken away. Man, I miss Verena Square. The captains...
What a nice place that was.
It was, yeah. Great place for a funeral, unfortunately. But the all captains... The you could. Cole said something, but he got a little robot-y. We'll fix it in the edit. Sorry, buddy.
We got it in post.
It wasn't that funny.
The captains disagree about the redistribution of wealth, aka giving everyone an equal amount of rich men to kill. Verena says that he's going to use the money to sponsor a feast for Pomona so that they can go legit. Verena is living the plot line of The Godfather Part 2, and the captains say, ah, that was the old days. Verena says that they got to change with the coming peace. The violent ways will be intolerable. The Aventine will buy fish and bread for the people, implying that the others will look bad, and Memmio stands up and agrees with Varinus. Blue Eyes is watching Varinus's children again. He brings Lucius over, gives him a doll, which is then given to Verena the Elder. They smile at each other, and he disappears. Blue Eyes then meets with Memmio, who reports it's done, and Memmio smiles.
Before I had the realization that Blue Eyes was working for Memmio and was in the gang, just the worst vibes. Abysmal vibes coming off this man. Just...
Yeah.
I'm inclined to agree.
As they get. I also thought it was interesting when they're back in the Collegium. Polo, like, I don't know, they're very particular about, like, zooming in on Polo's face, and he looks kind of forlorn about the whole situation. And, yeah, it's interesting.
That which comes up again later in the ep, definitely.
Sure does.
Polo says that he does not trust Memmio. Varinus goes on to say, hey, Cicero's kind of a high-value target. Can you take care of him in his villa? And Varinus also tells him to show respect. No looting. Polo seems excited to get his hands dirty again. He's packing up. Gaia inquires about what's going on, and Polo says he knows her game and doesn't want any part of her game. She drags his hand up her thigh and says, too bad, good game. Irini sees Polo and Gaia holding hands for a moment and asks, what did Gaia want? She also knows Gaia's game. Polo says Irini should come with him, and Varinus should come too. So they all go out vacation to the countryside. It's a completely different show all of a sudden. Irini asks Polo once again not to go, but he does.
This was so weird, like, because, like, it wasn't in my head they were just going to the countryside. Like, I thought, like, Polo was just like, yeah, Irini, do you want to come murder this guy with me?
Yes,
you
know what? Yes, that's exactly what I have in my notes. It's insane.
No one here except Jacob will get this. It's exactly like that episode of The Sopranos where Tony Soprano takes his daughter to visit colleges, and then he, you know, murders a guy, but, Anyway, Cicero plays a game with a young boy. A spy whispers something in his ear regarding Octavian and Antony. Cicero's face contorts. Cicero writes to Brutus that Antony and Octavian are in league and plan to trap him, and that Brutus should retreat. He is walking into a trap. Cicero refuses to run at his slave's insistence, and he tells another slave or servant, you've got to get this to Greece. And then Polo arrives. So you, Cicero, then. Cicero asks who he is, and then upon realizing who he is, he says, oh, I know the famous Titus Polo. And Polo's like, oh, I know Cicero as well. It's who would have thought these two would ever meet like this, you know?
It's a weirdly good dynamic here where Polo's on the doorstep to kill Cicero, and Cicero greets him as, ah, young man. Yeah, Polo, the young man.
Well, Cicero's like 85.
Sure, I mean, it's a bit of an exaggeration. Did you at any point think that Cicero was going to win Polo over? Because they started out so cordial, and like then Polo gets distracted by the peaches. I was like, wait, does Cicero have an angle here? What's going to happen?
I never once thought he was going to turn Polo over, because even though Cicero was saying he could offer a higher price, I think Polo was like, the money that's going to get paid to me to kill you is more guaranteed than you trying to get out of your death.
Oh, yeah, sure. Like, when he explicitly said that, I was like, okay, well, dream is dead. But
this, moments before his death, is like the most laid-back Cicero has been in this entire series, except maybe when he realizes Caesar's dead as well and is chatting with Brutus and stuff. But yeah, man's just I don't know, popped a couple Xanax off screen or something. Polo, enamored by peaches for a little bit. A slave comes swinging out with a sword, telling Polo to get away. Cicero tells him to put it away. He looks absurd, ridiculous. Polo thanks him.
I respect that guy.
Oh, yeah.
Polo thanks Cicero for his graciousness and telling his slave to put the sword away. Polo draws his own sword. Cicero asks for a few moments, and Polo's just like, whenever you're ready. Man, that was the vibes are so odd, this scene.
Yeah. I like this moment, though, for Polo, because he has shown throughout the show that he does respect faith. He does respect those around him that have beliefs, and he is really living up to what he has been developed as, and that is a character that does believe in a higher power. He's being respectful. I'm about to kill you, but you know what? You want to do parting stuff? I will respect that.
I love this moment for Cicero. Like, this is a term I'll throw around a lot this episode. It's very humanizing. We see Cicero, like, I don't know, on the eve of his demise, and he is like very caring towards the people who work towards him, and he's like, everyone else, like, you know, save your own skin, get out of here. And then, like, yeah, his servant comes out and is like trying to attack Polo. He's like, just, you're fine, leave it be, let it happen, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know, it just like reminded me that deep down, Cicero has been in this political game, but like never willingly and never with like ill intent. Like, he truly, it has felt like to me, truly, he's always like been trying to have the Republic's best interest at heart. And sure, not always did he act directly that way, but that's just because, as he kind of touched on, I think in one or two of the last episodes, like, he's gotten older and corruption's part of the game, and like sometimes it's not that simple. And it was just a sweet moment, and it made me sad to see the man go.
And I think we all know the humanizing that Jacob's talking about later. But anyway, Polo asks permission to pick some peaches. Cicero grants that permission. That's real sweet. Cicero looks to a bird. He says he's ready. He tells his wailing slave things will be all right, and he frees him, tells him to take care of his people. Polo leans in close to Cicero and says it's easier if you kneel. And Cicero does so, exposing his neck, which is then jammed with a gladius down his clavicle, which, relatively speaking, is one of the most efficient execution methods that the Romans came up with, I have to think. You know, a lot better than crucifixion. So the kids are playing in a grassy field. Verinus and Lydie, they're smiling. They're happy. Lydie says it's a shame that Verina the Elder can't be married unless Verinus lets her. And it is what Niobe would want. But Verinus says, well, she can't have a good man because a good man is not going to want a prostitute, former prostitute, for a wife. Then Cicero's slave or servant with the letter comes galloping down the road, nearly running over Lucius. He insults Verinus's family. Bad choice. He then moves to strike Verinus with a whip. Worst choice. Verinus throws him down, but Lydie says not to inflict violence in front of the children. The servant gallops off, but the letter was left on the ground, and little Lucius and Verina pick it up, play with it, make a hat out of it later.
I was like kind of losing it when that, like, when they just like made the hat out of it. This is like literally the turning point for this war. Like, that is like the most important message that didn't get to where it was supposed to go, and they're just here making a hat.
And Cicero was literally like, on your life, make sure this message gets to Cassius and Brutus, on your life.
This reminds me of an earlier scene in the series where Titus Polo stumbles upon like a quarter of the Republic's treasury that Pompey, yes, was trying to just like shift out.
Oh,
it's like,
yeah,
just the most random critical things keep happening to Verinus and Polo, which is part of the show's charm, how an average, yeah, quote-unquote person would react to these circumstances.
I did also think it was very, I don't know if lovely is the right word, but Polo just kind of walks in with these, I wrote them down as blood peaches, and just offers them to the family. Like, anyone want peaches?
And Verinus is juggling as well. Like, it's such a perfect family outing. Yeah. Polo then goes on from kissing Irene to nailing Cicero's hands on the Senate door. Still a perfect day. Tosca brings Octavian more names for Antony. More? Antony has many enemies. It takes time to remember them all.
Yeah, bro, there's going to be like 10 people left in Rome by the end of this list.
Well, we do get some stats. Agrippa says, you know, we've killed nearly 1,000. Surely that's enough. Messana says, hey, we still got a lot of men to pay. Octavian says they don't want to appear to be butchers, and Agrippa has to excuse himself for some air. Octavia approaches Agrippa. Long day? It's hard work, I imagine. Killing people, even defenseless ones. Agrippa states, well, we let most of them go to exile, we just take their money. Octavia says, it's necessary for the good of the Republic. It's giving leftist GF MAGA BF. I love their dynamic so much. Agrippa gets up to leave, and Octavia says that he's been avoiding her to avoid the awkwardness. And she says, well, it's good to know. If you really loved me, you wouldn't mind the awkwardness. Jacob, you're dying to say something.
He's just like me, for real. That's not the last time I'll say this episode.
Well, you know, Agrippa then shouts at Octavia, and I simultaneously shout at my TV, please do not toy with my feelings! But Agrippa says, his feelings are hopeless. I don't come from good blood. But Octavia says, that's for me to decide. I'll marry who I want to. And Agrippa's like, well
okay, yeah. Your brother's choosing. I gotta say, has Octavia forgotten where she lives? That she's like, yeah, I can just marry whoever I want.
Yeah, last time she did that, that guy got killed.
Yeah, it didn't work out too well for her the first time.
Spitting straight facts. Agrippa apologizes to her. He approaches her. She touches his face, and they kiss. They hear a door open, and Agrippa springs up. Messenus walks in, surprises the Octavia. He needs Agrippa to find tax projections. Agrippa goes to walks off, and Messenus looks at Octavia. Octavia shrugs and smiles. Messenus walks off. She bites her lip.
Like so far beyond what we're even here for, but Messenus in this scene, for some reason I wrote down, man, if Messenus was born today, he would have loved Barbie. And I don't know if you guys got the same vibe, but I was just like, something about Messenus, like, that man, he would have loved that film. I don't know what it is.
I didn't think that at the time, believe it or not, but now that you say it, I get it.
Yeah. That'd actually be a great tier list of like characters in HBO's Rome who would love Barbie to like absolutely being like red pilled against it.
I feel like Polo would love it. Verenus would hate it.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
I feel like Niobe would say she hates it, but that is because Verenus hates it, so she feels like she has to say she hates it, even though she probably loves it on the inside.
I think Adia would hate it. I don't know why, but like,
Adia in that time would have been the Adia destroys Barbie in 47 minutes.
There's a gathering. Oh, we get a timing check-in. There's a gathering of Jewish elders who imply that if they support Herod, he'll be the king of Judea and owe them one, and then they'll be in good with the masters of Rome. Levi and Timon are there. Levi's upset that they're conspiring bribery in a temple. Levi calls himself a son of Herod and the wrath of Israel, and he spits on the main elder, and Timon, Levi, and Timon's crew start beating up the corrupt men. They get out of there, laughing, smiling, and Levi and Timon remind his crew that they are the chosen people.
This is where I think the opening scene of the last episode would have been better fit to be a brief opening of this episode, because I think it would have set up a bit more of what Timon and Levi were going to be doing. I know that Jacob will disagree with me on this. The reason I feel that way is just because it would have had a beginning, and we would have gotten the payoff of what exactly that scene meant in this episode, rather than the beginning of the episode doesn't show up for the rest of it, and then just shows up in the middle of this episode. Now you can disagree with me all you want.
And here's why I disagree with you. I think it would come off as less genuine, right? We have to see Timon practicing his faith last episode, because we see him practicing his faith this episode, it feels insincere, right? You're like, oh, he's just back in the church because he wants to punch some elders or something. But it's more earned this way, in my opinion.
Cool.
This wasn't my initial thing. I was gonna say, I also disagree with BP, but in a different way. Just because, like, I feel like the praying scene at the beginning of this episode wouldn't have made what happened in this scene clearer at all, because like the entire time this scene was happening, I was like, what is happening?
Why is this happening?
I don't think having him praying at the beginning would have made
all right, Jacob, better question before Kay can get to this next part. What about if you're saying if it works better in the previous episode, what if instead of it opens with that part in the episode, it's kind of somewhere towards the end? It's not necessarily the final thing that happens in the episode, but somewhere closer to the end.
Sure.
That way it's easier
yeah.
to remember that something was being set up for Tymon in this episode.
I guess that's fine. I don't care.
BP, if I may, I think you're being like way too critical on this. Like, there's like been dozens of TV shows that have like done this, and like Game of Thrones is like the best one I can think of. I can't think of a specific example, but that show is like constantly gives 5 minutes per character per some faraway geographic location, and you got to keep track of it. But the show assumes you're smart enough to keep track of it, I guess. Like,
yeah. At this point, BP, I'm going to assume this is your least favorite moment. We've spent so much airtime on this little
it is
scene
not
from
my
last episode.
It is not my least favorite moment. I'm just trying to make it make sense from an editing standpoint.
And guess but what? It does.
Makes sense to me, baby. And I'm the one that matters.
Okay, not an editing standpoint, a structural narrative standpoint. I know I'm in the minority of the three of us. Well, Colts for very... Cole for very different reasons than Kay or Jacob, but
I care so little about that scene of Tymon praying. I'm amazed that two people are invested enough that we can have a conversation about it.
I really don't. I'm
well, Jacob said that it was his favorite. He liked that update from one episode ago, and BP decided to declare war. So
yeah.
this comes from
BP chose violence.
I didn't hate the scene.
For the record, I made it my least favorite part of that episode too, because we didn't have more time.
Roman soldiers run through the streets as Varinus's feast commences. Pullo is sad that Octavian isn't inviting them with the other soldiers to fight. Varinus says that soon there will be peace, and Pullo isn't excited for peacetime because violence is the trait he knows. But Varinus says it'll be different now. You and me, we can do big things. You will do big things. Pullo's happy to see Varinus full of purpose once again, which is nice to see, because he had a real rough start to this season. Varinus says that, hey, you're a second man of the Aventine, but Pullo insists that he's a soldier, or at least used to be.
The Varinus and Pullo dynamic, this is, like, back in its most full form with this scene, in my opinion. I think that we've had a really strong dynamic between Varinus and Pullo throughout the season thus far, but I feel like the season one that we love the buddy dynamic between these two, I was just like, yes, it's back full force this episode. Who knows if it can stay?
I have a thought there. Hopefully I'll remember to bring it up later. Let's see. A blind man moves through a brothel or hotel announcing it's the second hour, and Octavia is with Agrippa. And this confirms from like season one that when Octavia met up with Glabius, they were attended to by blind servants. I totally missed that. Everyone else caught it. You guys are right.
I was going to bring that up. I was going to say, I was like, yeah, I think this is the same blind brothel from season one.
Apparently so. Octavia even mentions that. Anyways. And yeah, I wrote this in my notes here, that remember that Adia had Glabius killed, and Octavia knows that and has reconciled that? Absolutely nuts. Anyway, Octavian and Agrippa
reconciled to the point where she's like, Octavian, shame on you for not loving your mother.
Indeed, right? It's I don't enjoy that dynamic. Anyways, Octavian and Agrippa have sex. Agrippa says they should go. Gets in the shower, and a blind man announces it's the third hour. Hilarious. They shower together and kiss, and then Agrippa really has to get going. He's in his soldier's gear. Octavia looks sad, but insists she's sure she's fine. He kisses her a final time, and Octavia cries.
Whew. And what a slobber knocker it is of a kiss. He gets. He just like me for real.
Oh my god.
Like, I mean, he laid
I
it
knew
on.
That was where
oh
you were
going to
say
god.
It again. Like, that wasn't a kiss. That was a kiss.
It, for real. Jaws unhinged like pythons, I'm telling you.
If it ain't this, I don't want it. Adia tells Octavian to be good to Antony, that he's a good man, and that they need each other. Messana says men are gathering in the field. When asked about Agrippa, Messana says he's probably saying goodbye to some women. Agrippa runs up. Octavian razzes him. I'm not going to go into details there. Octavia then runs up and says, sorry, she's late. Messana smirks. That
was
my
funniest
moment.
That boy knows.
Octavia kisses Octavian goodbye. Octavian and the boys go off. Adia and Octavia watch them go. And then Adia says, now you can tell me all about Agrippa. And Octavia denies they're lovers, but Adia calls it futile to lie to her. Octavia says, how did you know? And Adia says, well, I didn't until now. Adia can be so smart sometimes. and she says she'll keep it under wraps, but she should know you're not going to be able to marry Agrippa. And Octavia knows that, but says that she loves him. Oh my gosh, so sweet. And then Jocasta bangs on the door begging for help, her dress disheveled. Her whole family is dead. She was taken the night by men who dishonored her. Octavia says she's safe with them, and Adia says that they'll protect her. Yikes.
It's like Adia gets one, like, fun moment for the audience to be like, oh, she's actually pretty smart. And then just going back to what we hate most about Adia in the split second with Jocasta.
You are so right, BP. Because, like, I honestly, for most of this episode, had forgotten that I hated Adia. Like, her interactions were just, like, normal to acceptable. And and then, like, Jocasta comes banging on the door and is on the ground. And I immediately remember, oh, that's because of Adia. And I wrote down 3953.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Adia is such a interesting and in some ways, like, maybe the most vile character. I don't remember if I explicitly said this in season one, but she's, like, one, both a victim of the Roman patriarchy, but two, absolutely, like, is an agent in it and upholds it. And, like, mm-hmm. the fact she wasn't directly responsible in this instance, but she has, like, even just last episode, used, like, sexual violence or humiliation as a weapon upon other women, which is, like, extra despicable as a woman, I suppose. Polo opens up his war chest and looks at his old helmet. A lot of dents! Irini comes in, and they sit back-to-back on the bed. Polo says he's thinking of the old days, and he'd probably be a legate under Octavian by now. They could make a ton of money, be a short campaign. Irini cries, and Polo's upset. I'm just talking. And Irini says, she's pregnant! And Polo smiles. Yes, Cole?
This entire scene is my funniest moment.
Oh, yeah? Can you explain a little bit? Because it's like... It just doesn't start very happy at all. It starts with, like, a marital fight, kind of, and then, like, you know, Polo smiles, but...
When Irene walks in and she's like, hey, and Polo's like, hey. Like, it just felt, like, so, like, out of place what the show is, and I was like, that's, like, a modern-day interaction that would not happen here. And the second is, I was like, I'm pregnant, and he's like, what?
Even the closed captions say pregnant. I was like, what's going on?
She have a disease.
And then the end is where, like, she's, like, on the bed, like, crying because, like, Polo very clearly wants to go off and fight because that's what he wants to do. And Polo's just, like, standing at the foot of the bed just, like, with this big smile on his face, like, this is rad, as she's, like, but sobbing beneath him.
It's also, like, really great because, like, Polo's having this existential crisis the whole episode, and, like, this fixes him. He's like, oh, wait, I don't have to go off to war. I'm gonna be a dad. And then it just goes to show, if you have any problems in life,
just have a baby.
Have a child.
Just get pregnant.
I was hoping that there would be, like, some explanation of this on the IMDb trivia or in, like, the IMDb goofs as to why it was said wrong, and there's nothing there, and I'm really disappointed.
Well, it's because she said it.
Well, it's because
it's Latin isn't
not
her first
a native
language.
Speaker. Yeah.
Well, I know. I was just like, maybe there might move on.
God, Brutus looks at the ring of his family, received from his mother, smelt down from the crown of Rome's last king. A soldier announces that Octavian has arrived with Mark Antony. They have 19 legions compared to Brutus and Cassius's 14. They are days march away. Cassius says they must retreat immediately. He's gotten very pragmatic these last couple episodes, but Brutus says, no, we're not going to retreat. Cassius advises against it, but Brutus says, no more running. If we win, all the more glory for us. And if we are to die today, this is as good a place to die as any. And they have the high ground. Jacob.
If I may, and basketball fans will resonate with this, Brutus has the Mamba mentality. He is Kobe Bryant of the past.
Cassius, like, has really grown on me throughout the show. Like, when he initially showed up last season, I was like, who is this guy coming in, acting like he's, like, a main character? Like, what a jerk. But now, like, by this episode, I like him.
That's so nice that you like him now, this episode.
I mean, I liked him before this episode, too. It was just like, this seems like the time to say it.
All right. The armies line up at Philippi. Brutus notes, hey, I also got about your birthday, Cassius. And Cassius is like, hey, oh, it is my birthday. They shake hands. Brutus apologizes for not having a cake. And Cassius says, we'll have an extra big one next year. And
no cinnamon.
No cinnamon.
No cinnamon. Antony, on the other side of the line, is also spitting some light banter, but in his case, just heat. If you need to urinate now, it would be the time. Watch closely, boy. This is how history is made. Let's have some fun. Antony orders his line to advance. Cassius's line advances as well. The armies march and march and march and march, and shields hit, and there's some stabs and spears and men dying and whistles blowing and long lines, and a man gets impaled and another guy gets stabbed in the groin, and this happened over a large battlefield. Cut to Antony eating bread, watching it unfold. Octavian asks if he knows what's happening. Antony says he has no idea. He throws his bread away. When in doubt, attack. And then Octavian looks at Agrippa and he tells him to go, and Agrippa says, thank you. And that moment ruled, and it reminds me, this is very niche, it reminds me of this trailer for the show called Domina, in which a woman tells Agrippa in that show, cheer up, Agrippa, if it doesn't work, you can always kill everyone. Heat. I see we have a lot of takes here. Cole.
It's been a long time coming. I never thought it was going to happen. We got an honest-to-God battle in this show, and I was stoked. Didn't think it would ever happen, but we got it.
You know, I remembered this episode as exactly the same as Caesar and Pompey's, where it's just guys marching and then Caesar wins. I thought that's what happened here, and I was wrong. There was actually a little more extended out. Yeah.
And I have to say, I think it works really well. Like, I don't know, this may sound silly because there's a lot of violence. Oh, there's like a lot of moments of violence in every episode of Rome, but I feel like they're very sparing with how they use violence. It's always very purposeful. It's not a throwaway. And like, I don't know, it just makes this one war scene hit different. You know, as you said, we see people get stabbed in the neck. We see people get stabbed in the groin. We see ankles getting slit. I'm like, whoa, this is like happening. This is crazy. So I was a fan. I was all about this. They did it well.
Agree with everything that's been said. This battle was amazing to see. I remember hearing about the reason why Rome was canceled, and it was because of the production budget just getting skyrocketingly high. And throughout this season, I kept saying, I get that there's a lot going on with the show location-wise, character-wise, but there's a lot of stuff from season one that carried over that I feel like could have saved money on budget. And then we get to this battle, and I said, okay, I get where this budget was going. It was going to this, and man, it was a cool sequence that was really well spent.
I do want to go back a moment and state this again, because I really love this character interaction. Octavian, after Antony charges, Octavian looks at Agrippa and says, go. And Agrippa says, thank you. I mean, like, for all the soft boyness I attribute to Agrippa, the dude is a very good warlord. Good for him.
Agrippa's ready to go start killing.
He's like, this is all I ever wanted this whole time.
I lied to Octavia. I was stoked about killing all those guys.
A new line of soldiers advance over the dead, with Antony and Agrippa joining the battle. One side appears to be winning. A soldier reports to Brutus that the right flank is gone, that Antony has broken through. Cassius announces the same thing as arrows rain down, and as a defensive formation, he shouts, Jacob, say the line I know you're thinking.
Oh, no. Oh, Testudo!
Well done. Arrows break through the shield line. One drops in a man's face. That seemed just kind of cruel. Cassius announces they charge forward. Then Cassius's bloody body is brought to Brutus. Brutus cradles his head. Brutus is advised to fall back, and he watches soldiers deserting in their armor. Brutus tells Cassius they gotta go, and Cassius is dead. Brutus holds him as soldiers insist that they leave. Thought, Jacob?
I have a thought about Testudo.
Yeah.
Because we did have a discussion, I believe two episodes ago, about the episode name, Testudo et Lepus, Tortoise and Hare. Mm-hmm. Do you guys feel like this is proof that Cassius and Brutus were the tortoise? And the collective force of Octavian and Mark Antony were the hare?
I feel like it's kind of a bit of a bait and switch on that, because the previous couple of episodes, it has been heavily stated that Brutus and Cassius do have larger numbers because Octavian and Antony are not on good terms. And I think with Antony and Octavian's army being the tortoise, they managed to come together. Think when Brutus and Cassius thought they had it in the bag. And I think that's what makes Antony and Octavian the tortoise of the situation, because they started out really slow on this war because they were pivoted against each other, but then they came together and defeated Brutus and Cassius.
Fair.
That's an interesting thought, Jacob. I don't have the brain space to make a great argument either way. Do you think that?
I mean, I don't know if the parallels work well with history as you and I know it, but it would be, I don't know, it would be interesting at the very least. It's like a very purposeful piece of dialogue, I kind of feel like. Like, they could just put their shields up and, like, do that. And, like, Testudo has been explicitly mentioned in a name of the episode before.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I feel like it's not out of place to at least try and draw a connection there, but I also wouldn't be surprised if, like, it was a reach. So, I'm not sure.
You know, okay, Jacob, this is the most succinct way I can say this. And just, like, me, maybe, you know, knowing the scope of the rest of the show and history, like, I don't see in either analogy, like, the tortoise or the hare winning the death of the Roman Republic, I guess.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
It's just like, I don't know if that metaphor itself is apt to describe.
Sure, taking it to its fullest extent doesn't really, like, translate well.
Right. But it's a good thought, though. And mm-hmm. I will also note that Brutus and Cassius had some beautiful dialogue that I don't know, for the sake of brevity, skipped over, but it's really nice, their departures. Mm-hmm. Brutus looks at the advancing army, but the men around him do not desert. Brutus tells him to save their skins and to tell his mother, he pauses, something suitable. He kisses his father's ring and alone advances. He takes off his armor and draws a sword. The soldiers stop, uncertainly look at him. Brutus starts striking at them, is immediately surrounded by their shields. He cuts someone's hammy, and he's stabbed in the back, and he's stabbed again and again and again and again and again. Antony says that it smells like victory. Agrippa reports that the body of Cassius has been found, but Brutus's has not. And we see a man cut off a ring from an anonymous corpse. End of episode.
This was the parallel I wanted to talk about with Cicero's death. I also think Brutus gets a very similar moment with before his death. One, kind of just accepting his fate, but also how he is telling all of his soldiers to save their skins and being a human in that aspect. He's not telling them to push on. He's telling them to go and retreat, because I believe they also say that their white flag is missing, so they can't surrender at all. So the battle is still going to go on until every last person they could find is dead. But I really think that this was a moment that when Jacob was talking everything about Cicero's death, I think there's a lot you could say that same thing with Brutus's death for that same reason. He is, and he really got Caesared because he got stabbed a bunch of times.
Yeah, okay, someone explicitly said the parallel, yeah.
Yeah, I made a note of it when I saw it.
This is just like the Calends of February. All right, guys. Well, we will go ahead and get into some breakout rooms, discuss some theories here. I had a set question for BP and Cole, but I will have another one that I will tack on. Pullo and Varinus, what's going on with them in their heads right now, and where are they going? Because Varinus was doing really bad early in the season. It seems like he's pulling it together, but there's also maybe some forces conspiring against him. Where might that be going? And Pullo was pretty purposeless this episode up until when he smiled and Irini says that she was pregnant. Where might he be going? Are we in for the buddy cops staying tight? Are we up to another fight and split maybe? Who knows? I'm curious what your thoughts may be. Number two, there's going to be at least one character death next episode. Someone from our main cast of people who we often talk about on the show. So I'm curious, who might be some people you think will immediately be killed off next episode? Hello, Jacob. How are you feeling about the history this episode? I went ahead and just made a list. There was a lot of like actual history covered this episode.
Yes.
So I made a big list there. Do you have any thoughts you want to rattle off first, though?
I don't know. I thought, as far as I knew, vaguely all the war things and whatnot seemed like correct. I don't know if Cassius and Brutus actually didn't know about them joining forces. I figured they would have known.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly fought at some point, and I don't remember if both Cassius and Brutus died right then and there. I thought it probably realistically, if my memory is correct, took a couple more battles or something along those lines.
Well, I'll go ahead and run through the actual history here. So let's see here. Octavian, Antony, and Lepidus did indeed make list of people they wanted dead, whose property
Begong, the prescription list. Yeah, I remember.
Yes,
that.
Begong. Yes, yes, yes. the prescription list, the men whose property they would kill and then seize to pay their massive armies. There are conflicting accounts of their conduct when making these lists, which is obscured by propaganda. Some say that a young Octavian excitedly made a large prescription list, and mm-hmm. others say he was more moderate and even tried to get Cicero off the list. But the truth is that all of them had a hand in making it, and they prescribed people ostensibly who were supposed to be close to them. Like, all of them lost someone that, again, they should have maybe cared about. On the prescriptions, there's another spectacular version of the death of Cicero. And I talked about this in the Fulvia bonus episode, that when Cicero was killed, his head was brought to Antony at dinner, and Antony's wife Fulvia gleefully jammed hairpins into his tongue for all the crap he spewed on Antony. And Fulvia herself, who is a real historic person who was not portrayed at all in HBO's Rome, mm-hmm. Antony was not a bachelor at this time in real history. I should point out, King Herod, I don't think I really brought him up in Death of the Roman Republic, but he was a real king of Judea, and he was, I'm very murky on this, but he was allied with Augustus, and it was kind of they had a good thing going there. So that guy Herod that the Jewish elders were talking about earlier does eventually get into power. And then for the Battle of Philippi and the deaths of Brutus and Cassius, which does indeed occur there, I mean, end of the day, Antony and Octavian win, Brutus and Cassius dead, the actual battle goes a little differently. So Antony's army is beating Cassius's army, Octavian is sick, and my favorite biography on Augustus does not mention Agrippa was there and did not have Agrippa's mm-hmm. help. Maybe he did. Wikipedia says that Agrippa was there, or probably there at least.
Interesting.
I'm not really sure on this.
Yeah.
But in either case, Octavian is sick and his men get thrashed by Brutus's army. So we have one side winning, one side losing on each side. Brutus's cavalry runs to Cassius's camp to tell him the good news. I'm beating Octavian. Cassius thinks it is Antony's cavalry coming to kill him. It's also important to remember, this is a Roman civil war. Everyone is dressed the same. It's kind of tough to tell the distance. And then Cassius commits suicide. There is a 3 weeks where the armies form up ready to face each other. Octavian and Antony formed up against a lone Brutus. Octavian recovers, and when they finally clash, Brutus's men give up first, and Brutus also commits suicide. So that's more of the real history behind the episode. But,
okay.
Yeah. And then this is a very odd question here, Jacob. So do you think HBO's Rome gave shipping potential to their presentation of Brutus and Cassius?
Well, you're right. That is a question. That is a question and a half. I think they gave shipping potential to Brutus and Cassius the same way, like, any just good wholesome male friendship in a show is shipping potential. Like, I'll talk about this in my favorite moment of the episode.
Okay.
But like, it feels like two dudes who know each other well and have been together a long time, and you know, they know the ins and outs of one another. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's bait for shipping for any two characters anywhere. And it just so happens these are just two guys who are dudes and love each other, presumably. I don't know.
Yeah.
So that is my roundabout answer to that question. Yes.
Okay. My perspective, and like, I thought this, I think, a lot more on the first rewatch. I still think it now. I think that they just, Cassius's dynamic, specifically with Brutus, like, he's just kind of extra complimentary and kind to him, I suppose, in a way that makes me think of like light flirting, basically. And I think for Brutus, it's all platonic on his end and he doesn't see it. But I think if you want to watch Cassius's interaction specifically with Brutus, you could suspect that he has a crush on him. On the other hand, I see what you mean, where it's, you just see two guy friends hanging out and stuff, and you could apply that shipping label. I think that's what BP did to us on the very first time we did this breakout room thing. So I actually see that perspective. So, yeah. All right, BP and Cole, let me see here, guys. Well, I'll start with the less complex question first. I said at least one character would die next episode that we're pretty well familiar with. Who do we think it is, BP?
Cole and I were very much on the same page. We both said Servilia.
Okay.
Cole thinks it will be suicide based on wanting to curse Adia, Octavian, and Mark Antony. What I think is going to lead up to a possible suicide is she's going to try to exact revenge on everyone that was against Brutus, and it just backfires so horribly that she gets into a very much worse mental state than she already probably will be at the beginning of the episode because of losing her son, and just take her own life because she's basically lost everything, and that's what leads to it.
Okay. Cole, anything to add?
I just want to expand on my thoughts on the Cervilia suicide thing. Okay. Just because I think with her son being dead, she pretty much doesn't have anything to lose. So she, like, all she wants is to just, like, make Adia and, like, her entire, like, family and loved ones suffer. And they've talked about, like, cursing people in the show before, where, like, Varinus, like, did it to his kids, and Pola was like, you didn't, like, sacrifice an animal or anything, so, like, it doesn't count. I was like, so she could, but I was like, if she has nothing to lose, like, she's got nothing to live for, it's like, maybe it would make, like, a pretty powerful sacrifice if she was like, I don't need to be here for the end result. I just, like, I need the end result. So she might just, like, do it to herself as, like, the best sacrifice she could give.
Technically, it wouldn't be too far off, though, with an animal being sacrificed, though, because humans, by technicality, do have meat. And so
we could... Is that your definition of an animal?
So, in a way, you could say that a human sacrificing themselves could possibly say, well, I could eat an animal. Might as well sacrifice myself. I don't know. Cut this part. Okay. That was just me very much.
Yeah, I can't fix it all in post.
Like, I don't, I'm gonna be honest, I don't know. You can feel free to bleep this. I don't know what the hell he's talking about.
I tried to explain to the best of my abilities. I just
he didn't say any of that in the
technically
breakout.
Technically, humans
I don't know
have
where
meat.
From.
Well, I was I just thought of it as, like, as soon as you brought up the sacrificing of the animal, it made sense in my head, but it didn't make sense coming out of my brain.
No, BP, you just could have said, technically humans are animals. We all know this. You don't need to say humans have meat and are therefore animals. That's what's tripping me up. But, I mean, to be fair, you know, that's a, I don't, like, gun to my head, I don't know if, like, literally, if there was a gun to my head, I don't know if I could come up with a better explanation as to why humans are animals than that, so.
I could. Put a gun to my head, I could.
We'll save that for episode 11. Okay, so the more, I don't know, more in-depth question. Cole, if you maybe want to explicate this a little bit more. Pola and Varinus, okay. Where are they, like, maybe really at emotionally? Are they as good as, I don't know, they purport, or, and also maybe what stormy seas may be ahead, or is it all fine?
They're both good for now, genuinely. Like, Polo is like, he's still probably got some lingering issues about, like, you know, being a soldier, that's all good for, but that whole being a dad thing, the pregnant stuff is really got him hyped up. And Varinus is in a good place right now because, like, he's got his family, he's got his best buddy Polo, like, everything's coming up Varinus right now. I think things are going to get pretty rough in the future for both of them. Okay. For Varinus, and BP agreed with me on a lot of this. For Varinus, I think BP said he thinks, like, the stuff with Memmio is going to come in and, like, mess stuff up with his family, and maybe, like, he's going to lose his family. I think it might just be, like, he's going to find out how they actually feel about him, and that's just going to, like, ruin him, like, emotionally. Like, it's just going to get, like, Varina is just going to be like, no, I actually hate you for what you did to our mom and to us.
Okay.
With Polo, I'm really worried that Guy is just going to come and screw his relationship with Irene up. Because, like, I have absolute faith that, especially after this episode, that Polo, like, would not ruin that relationship. So I think it's going to be something that Gaia does to screw it up that's going to, like, cause issues there.
Okay.
And then I think Polo and Varinus' relationship itself is going to have a big issue in that Polo is Octavian's man and Varinus is Mark Antony's. And right now, that's not a problem. That will become a problem in the future, and it will become a bigger one than it was before.
I think that's a very wise observation. I wanted to potentially throw something at you you may not have considered in regards to Polo and Irene's relationship, because Polo is father to child in Egypt. Do we think that could ever
about that.
What?
We don't officially know if that is Polo's son, but something that I also mentioned to Cole, that I don't know if Varinus will exactly feel like he's as on top as he has felt the last couple of episodes, but I definitely think Polo is definitely going to be in a state by the end of the season that's where Varinus was at the beginning of this one, where he is just rage-filled, very angry at everyone and everything. Because if Gaia screws things up with him and Irene, there's going to be arguably some more bloodshed. Because Polo's a very violent person.
So wait. Your guess for the end of the season and therefore end of the series is that Polo ends in a bad place? I'm not saying you're wrong at all, BP. Or it's, you know, it's like, yes. I don't know. It's just very long. That's like a long shot you're looking at. Okay.
I'm not saying he's going to be like in a god-awful place, but I think he's going to be major depresso by the end of the season.
Not a god-awful place, not like Varinus was, who you just compared him to.
Okay, he's going to be major depresso by the end of the season. I firmly believe it, but he also is very violent, and I think that more bloodshed's going to happen if something happens to Irene.
All right.
I do want to comment now. BP gave me time to collect some thoughts on Caesarion and that whole thing with Polo. I'm not really sure if that's going to come into play, because like Polo doesn't know that that's his kid.
Like reason to think he will never know, because it's in Cleopatra's best interest for her to lie and say that it's Julius Caesar's child. But I just thought it was an interesting thing.
I don't even know if, but like, I don't remember how that episode ended perfectly, so I don't even know if like Polo like considered that was his kid. I'm pretty sure.
No, that Varinus and Polo share a look with each other as Caesar presents young Caesarion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I knew Varinus kind of like was thinking about it, but I couldn't remember if like Polo made the connection.
I totally forgot about that. All right, guys, let's hop on again at 32. It's storming for me, so hopefully the power doesn't go out. But
I opened my window because stop storming, but if the cicada's outside allowed, let me know and I'll shut the window.
Lights have flickered like 4 times, and I was like worried that the call was just gonna die.
Yeah. Okay, I'll see you guys at 32.
Thank you, 32.
Quick production note, the lightning storm and subsequent power outage did affect our ability to record that night, so the next day we got back together to finish the episode. I'd already pre-cleared that no one had a least favorite moment of the episode, surprisingly. So the rest of this is just favorite moments and wrap-up, essentially. All right, well, Zeus himself conspired to cancel DOTRR, but we just keep crawling back here. So we did not get to finish up favorites last night. So of season 2, episode 6, Philippi, gentlemen, I bet all of us have a favorite scene from here. Will and Abet, who would like to share their favorite scene from this episode? Pretty dynamic episode first.
I would like to go first because there's a decent chance someone else has mine, and it is thus far my most favorite scene in the show.
Whoa. High praise.
And that would be Brutus's final stand.
Hmm.
Fair enough.
This scene is rad. It's, as we said and we previously discussed, a real humanizing moment for Brutus. He tells all soldiers to get out of there, but he himself says, nah, like, I started this, I'm gonna finish it. And just that shot of him just, like, walking up to fight the entire army, and it's like, he's gotta be, like, scared out of his mind, but, like, he doesn't show it on his face. He's accepted what's about to happen. He just, like, takes off the armor and just, like, goes at him and does more damage than I thought he was going to, which was none at all.
Yeah. Did more damage than I could.
I feel like I actually do have an odd pick for my favorite scene. It is the moments before the battle occurs. We see the parallel sides of war. And I think, as I alluded to yesterday, or what is earlier in this episode, I felt like this episode was immensely humanizing for a lot of characters. Like, we just saw them not as cogs in the political machine, but we had moments where we saw them as themselves interacting genuinely with the people around them. And I thought
nothing was more emblematic of those moments before the battle, because we see Cassius and Brutus, and they just have this really lovely, sweet, quick conversation about Cassius's birthday. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry I didn't make you a cake next time, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Just make sure there's no cinnamon. And it really just like perfectly encapsulates the dynamic between the two. And then you have the same thing happening on the other battlefield, where it's encapsulating the dynamic between Antony and Octavian, which is wildly different, but is very true to who they are as humans, right? Antony's like, oh, let me show you how it's done, blah, 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 blah. And Octavian is kind of, you know, sat back and a little more, you know, methodical as he is. And I just thought it was a great episode. And that moment was great for showing who they were.
Jacob, I'll tack on there, like, that was also my favorite scene, the humanizing moments before the battle. And like, oh, wow. I think, and this sounds so stupid, but I think all of us can like empathize with that. Not that any of us have ever been involved with a civil war. Mm-hmm. I hope it's empathetic in that all of us, before we were going to undertake something big in our lives, whether it was like a job interview or something built up in your head that's just like a so societal, you're just cracking little jokes with your buddies before you do something where you put it all out there on the line.
Mm-hmm. Lovely, beautiful, well said.
How about you, BP?
My favorite scene in this episode is the scene of Cicero's death. The reason I love the scene is because we've talked about a lot of points. Do you guys hear a dog barking in the back?
Bailey. Yes.
I just, BP, I'd power through with this and we can switch mics in the next recording.
Okay. The reason I love the scene, it is a humanizing moment for Cicero. It is really one of the only times we have seen him super relaxed. And even though, obviously, it's a very tense situation, he has accepted it. He has accepted that death has come before him. And I like that he is still respectful to Polo. He's not being super mean or snarky to him. He's just kind of like, yeah, I know, you're here to do your job. I can make you an offer. I know you're probably not going to take it, but I'll still make it. Polo's being respectful to Cicero in regards to letting him pray and say some final goodbyes before he is killed. And I just think that this was a very nice moment, because this is the first time Polo and Cicero have really interacted. And I think that the dynamic was really strong, and I'm glad we got one little taste of what Cicero and Polo in a scene together would be like.
I agree, BP. Like, they're very much completely different sides of, like, I don't know, the social Rome. Caste of Rome, right? Polo is the scourge, the underbelly. Cicero is the upper class, the Senate, and they treat each other with immediate respect. And it's like, it's so cool. And it is, yeah, you're right. It's very powerful. Well said.
All right. Well, thank you guys for sharing some favorite thoughts there. Man, this episode, a lot of warm, fuzzy feelings, and also just blood as well, unfortunately.
Can I just say, my favorite episode so far of season two, maybe my favorite episode ever.
All right. I had a similar thought, but I wanted to wait a little bit to, you know, say I don't want to let it simmer.
Mm-hmm.
I loved this episode, and I think this will stay in top 10 of the series once we get to that point.
I gotta say, I don't know if top 10 of like 22 episodes is like
high praise,
amazing praise, but
top 50th percentile. My boy's doing great.
It's the thought that counts.
So we'll go ahead and wrap up here. If you would like to learn more about the real history behind this episode, you can listen to Death of the Roman Republic, Chapter 16, Warlords, Peacemakers, Lovers, for some perspective on the Battle of Philippi and its aftermath.
You can follow me on Twitter and on Letterboxd at BP Movie Review Hour.
Hi, my name is Jacob. My Twitter is now defunct at this period of time, if you're listening. So to this week's bit of advice for the world is find a moving body of water. Study the currents. Think about how that water affects not only the nature around you, but your life and the society that you live within.
It's so interesting that these would not be tweets you would make. You know, like, if this is your outlet for tweeting, like,
yeah,
this is not what soup. Catfish YOLO was about.
Yeah, you've changed, and I'm not a fan.
And Cole?
Hope everyone has a good day.
With all that being said, friends, Romans, countrymen, I hope you enjoyed this show, Extended Cut.